The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And hello, folks. How you doing? Pete Trabuco here, live on tape at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group radio station on a beautiful Saturday afternoon in Philadelphia. Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And I'm just so happy to be here, part of the Beasley Media Group station. And we've got just an incredible guest. Okay. Now, if you tuned in last week, he was a co-host, okay, for the show, and he did absolutely amazing. In fact, he did so well that maybe we'll call it, you know, live on tape with Yaron Urbas instead of Pete Trabuco. That's how good he did. So he's just an amazing guest. We've had him on once before, and he doesn't. He's acting all over the place. I mean, to give you an idea of what he has done, this is just some of the things that he has done. I'm sure you've watched these shows. Orange is the New Black, Bull. You got Manifest, Plot Against America, The Holdovers, Crazy Town, The Blacklist, and The Men Who Built America. And I can go on for another 30 or 40 frames, if you want to call it, about how well this actor is. He's an amazing person, and he's down to earth. He's such a good person. And I was lucky enough to actually be in a movie called Pickens. In which basically I was his lackey, I guess. Basically, you know, he played a mafia guy, and I kind of played the guy that just says, yeah, what you want? What you want to do next? What you want to do? Yeah. I'm hip. That was my job, basically. I think that was all the lines I had too, as well. And that's in Pickens. But we have with us today actor, director. He's done everything. Yaron Urbas. And Yaron, it is so good to have you in the studio this time. The last time we did this, prior to the time you co-hosted, you did it over the phone. So now I get to hang with you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So how
mm-hmm.
are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing amazing because I'm right here, man. I'm right here with you, and I'm doing great. You know,
yes.
It's a beautiful day and just grateful for everything.
Yeah, and he's in the studio, folks, basically. We look out the window, we can see the actual city of Philadelphia. You have to squint a little to see it, but you can.
I was going to say, Philly's a beautiful place. I didn't know that.
You didn't know. Of course you did that. Of course you did.
I love Philly. I love Philly. I every time I come out here, I learn more and more about Philly. The Philly cheesesteaks are a hit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Philly's I guess you could say it's a magical place.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And as you can tell from, Yaron, he's from Brooklyn. So we got to be nice to him, okay?
No. I feel like Philly people and Brooklyn people get along. I feel
like
we understand each other.
Absolutely,
you know?
Except when we're playing baseball or playing football, because then at that point, I mean, it's don't never wear a Giants jersey at the stadium here in Philadelphia. But even worse, never ever wear a Cowboys jersey in Philadelphia at the stadium.
Because, taking notes.
Oh, and listen, if you do that, the next call that's going to be made is I'm at the hospital right now, and quick story. You know, the Heisman Trophy, you know Joe Theismann?
Of course, yeah.
Joe Theismann played for the Washington Redskins. Okay, they're not called the Redskins anymore, although I will not say that other name. It's the Redskins, okay, in my mind. Well, he played for them. Anyway, bottom line is it was Christmas time, and he's taking a blow, basically on the side. You know, they're kicking Philadelphia's butt, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is he hears a scream from behind in the stands. And this is all veteran stadium, so it's pretty high, the first level. So he hears a scream. The person falls down on the floor. All right, he comes running over to help because he hears a scream. He sees the person on the ground. As he gets closer, it's Santa Claus. Remember, it's around Christmas time. So this guy's wearing a Santa Claus outfit, except he did one thing wrong. He was waving a Redskins flag.
Ooh.
They threw him out of the stadium onto the field.
Wow. That's like soccer game energy. You know?
Yeah.
Like
you're right.
like the hooligans, and I mean, as frenzied as we get as fans of any sport in the US, I think the most sort of passionate, if you will, fans are at soccer games. So it definitely looks like it turned into a soccer game energy vibe.
It did. I mean, I'm telling you, in Philadelphia, folks, just let you know, in Philadelphia, if you are wearing outfits like that, be prepared to actually be on the football field. Maybe not because you wanted to be, but you just end up there. Joe Theismann was like, I can't believe it. I know they hated us, but right. Santa Claus?
I know. How do you hate that? I hate Santa. I mean, what is wrong with you?
This is true. Well, Philadelphia fans, like I said, they basically take it very seriously. I like that part. The Jets do it also, too, as well, in New York. Not so much the Giants. But the Jets actually get really involved. Their fans get involved as well. And I know that you're from Brooklyn, so obviously you're either a Jet fan or a Giant fan.
You know, yeah, people ask me all the time, or the same. Are you a Mets fan, a Yankees fan? You know, I can't talk to that. I got to be honest. I can't. It's not like I follow football. I got to be honest. I can't. I don't follow that closely.
No.
My best friend's a season ticket holder for the Giants.
Okay.
So I go to a Giants game from time to time, but you know what? I guess I'm easy. Give me the tickets, I'll go to the game. I just love football.
Yes.
You know?
But it's fun. It's a great sport. And of course our Eagles, you know, they're hanging in there. We love them. Hopefully they'll be never, and we won't go through 7 games in a row where they lose going to the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen this year, but the bottom line is we got the Eagles, and unfortunately, when it comes to the Giants and the Jets right now, oh my goodness, yeah. I don't know who's worse at this point. Even with Rodgers, with the Jets, it's been a real tough time. But let's talk about you. Okay, you have done so much. I've worked with you. You are an incredible actor. And, of course, Orange is the New Black is one of the ones. In fact, if you go to some of the sites, you'll actually see you wrong there, okay, on the front there, basically, when you're looking into, you know, the internet and, and seeing all that stuff. Okay, so you were on that show a lot. You did a lot of stuff with that. What was that like, being on that show? That was a popular show.
It was. Orange is the New Black was awesome. I actually recently did a social media post where I talked about it was actually one of the worst auditions I ever did.
Really?
It was. It was a horrible audition. I was shocked that I booked it. Uh-huh. Now, that's not to say that the casting director, like, just said, hey, you know, here you go. It wasn't like that. I basically flubbed my lines in the audition. I got nervous. My tongue got tied.
Okay.
So for me, it wasn't the best audition I ever did. I was very, very disappointed in myself. I actually had to pull out my sides, even though I was fully memorized. I was very disappointed. So what made it more special is the fact that I got a call 2 days later when I was having my pity party from my manager. My manager was like, Yaron, you booked Orange is the New Black. I was like, wait, what? I was like, you know, Marianne over at Dreammaker Talent. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, why? What's wrong? Like, she was surprised because, you know, I've worked. It's like, sure. And you know, I'm a professional actor, but yet I was like, you know, I just didn't give the best audition I could have. So that made it sweet. It was an amazing experience. I learned that even if you think you messed up, you might not have.
Uh-huh.
You know, because with acting, like, you're in your head often. You know, well, you try not to be, and it may not appear that you are, but you're sometimes, you can be self-aware and overthinking things. And I actually think maybe my nervous energy actually let me be a little more natural. And who knows, maybe that's why I gave a better audition than I thought I did.
Yeah.
But here's the other part of the story that I love. Originally, it was just going to be a co-star. So a co-star is just one episode and you get a few lines.
Sure.
And then, so that's what I did. I went on set, did my thing. And a couple of weeks later, I got a call and said, hey, Orange is the New Black wants you back again.
Uh-huh.
I was like, what? Yeah. Do I have to audition? No, you've already got it. They need you to—I played a cop. Tom the Cop is the scene I played.
Sure.
And they basically—opposite one of the lead characters, Bailey, which was awesome. He's a really, really good dude.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, they called me back to play another scene. They needed the same cop to put basically a convict in a cell. And I got to work with Andrew McCarthy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the story with Andrew McCarthy is only about 7-8 years ago, he was a director on something that I just played background in. I was just a background actor. Now, for people that don't know, background actors don't have lines.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't even really have to audition. You just got to show up and put on the right clothes. Okay.
That's right.
Which I can do once in a while. So I remember I was in a shot and I guess I was distracting. I wasn't doing anything, but I was just in the shot. So Andrew goes, a little to the right. Okay, sir, a little more to the right. He's talking to me. He's telling me to get out of the shot a little bit. And then he finally goes, you know what, just get out of the frame. Just get out of the frame.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness gracious.
So here I am, fast forward 7-8 years later, and the man is directing me on the spot. And here's the moment that was even funnier. In the scene, I have to close these gates, the bar to the cell, right?
Sure.
It's a cell. Uh-huh. So I have to close the gate. Now, it's actually controlled by a human being. People don't know. Well, in this scene, a person's actually making it look like it's closing.
Gotcha.
Right? And he's down below, so you can't see him. It just looks like me closing the cell. The problem is his timing is a little off.
Oh, no.
And Andrew's looking at me, and he's going, sir, I need you to close that gate a little bit faster. He said it a couple times. Finally, the guy rescued me, the guy who's actually closing the gate that you can't see. And he's like, it's me. It's not him. It's me.
Oh, my goodness.
No, he's great. Andrew McCarthy is great, by the way. Great, really nice director. Good guy. But anyway, it wonderful moment overall. Being on Orange is the New Black. A very just awesome show to be a part of. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. You can still watch it to this day. And it just beautiful story, awesome cast, the whole deal.
Oh, yeah. Now, well, we watched the whole series. In fact, Kate Mulgrew was, oh, man, she's amazing in that. And it's just a great show and a great experience for you as an actor. And you've been doing this for years. You're actually very good at it. I've actually been on when we were doing the Pickens thing, I wasn't in a lot of scenes. But the thing is, when I watched you do some of the scenes, because I hung out and just watched, and I was just amazed at how you picked up the character so well and how you do that in everything. Bull, for example, and of course, Manifest, you were in those, and Gotham, FBI, at the list, Law and Order.
Law and Order. And, the thing with Law and Order is that's kind of cool. So I've been an actor for give or take about 17 years, which is actually starting later in life for me. I started in my mid-30s.
Sure.
And most people that, like we interviewed Richard Klein together.
That's right.
He's been acting forever, right?
Oh, yes.
But with that said, so Law and Order in New York is sort of a rite of passage for all actors. The original Law and Order.
Okay.
So you kind of know you made it when you've had a part, a line, a co-star, something, a guest star on Law and Order. I did not. Only recently, in the last couple of years, I got a part on Law and Order: Organized Crime.
Okay.
And I was just like, I guess I'm in. I guess I officially, even though I'm a SAG-AFTRA, I'm union, I've had I've been on lots of network shows, streaming shows that people know, and yet Law and Order: Organized Crime finally happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It must have been amazing on set and everything along those lines. You mentioned about like the person that doesn't have any lines, that just in the background. My brother actually was on The Sopranos as one of those actors at the bada bing. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And it's a cool story. The thing is, he didn't have many lines. They paid him for the day. He took off work. And he got there. He looks real Italian, so he fit right in, okay? And he's in that scene in the background, right? And they had to shoot that scene. Again, we talked about film. It takes sometimes a half hour, even longer than that, to film a few scenes. One scene, maybe. Well, he's sitting in the back drinking, and they give him real beer at this place. They don't just give him fake stuff. They give him the real stuff in this bar, okay? So they were drinking. So he's sitting there and he's drinking and he's supposed to be, lapping it down nice and easy. He didn't. So every scene, he just tore it down, right? So now it's empty and you can see it in the background, even though it's a split shot, maybe a second, it's empty. And then it wasn't empty. So they had to fill it up again. And he learned that every time they did that, every scene they did that, he drank it all, filled it up, and they kept going back and forth. He was so soused when it was done. But he says, you can see me. If you stop the tape correctly, you can see him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But so that's his acting ability. I don't know.
Hey.
He's not a SAG actor because he didn't really do that. But
sure.
But the thing is, he had a great time. He's like, anytime you want to call me, let me know. I'm back. As long as I'm on the bar drinking, I'm having a really good time. I think it was Christina was in the front there, so, and they were having that conversation there. So it was pretty interesting to go through that again.
Giving away the secrets. Now we're going to have this flood of like background people trying to get into the business.
Yeah, but usually they don't give beer.
I'm kind of surprised. Yeah, normally it's just some sort of food coloring or apple juice. They use apple juice
or maybe iced tea or something that looks the same color.
Yeah, but it was The Sopranos. I mean, they probably just wanted him in character,
Well, let's put it this way. I think when it was all done, they said, thank you very much. Do not come back. But he had a blast doing that.
Good
so
for
it's
him.
Funny.
Good for him.
So for those of you that are just tuning in, we are with actor, director, just an incredible person, Yaron Urbas, and we'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a life hack in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifehack.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
The Americans with Disabilities Act, also known as the ADA, protects people from being discriminated against because of a disability, both visible and non-visible disabilities, someone who is deaf or uses crutches, someone who has severe pain or depression are just a few examples. To learn more about the ADA and to receive free technical assistance, contact the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center at 1-800-949-4232 or visit us online at adainfo.org.
And hello, everybody. Pete Tribuco here, WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Pete Tribuco here. And listen, I talk about them every week. They're very, very important to me. They're a great bunch of people. World star public relations where excellence meets exposure. And I really mean that, folks. So are you ready to elevate your brand to new heights? Well, their team of dynamic PR experts is here to make your story shine bright on that global stage. And whether you're a startup, established artist, business, or a rising star, they specialize in crafting narratives that captivate and campaigns that resonate. So when you're thinking of it, think of World Star PR, your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. So join the ranks of those who already have done so. And headline with, of course, World Star Public Relations, and let your story take center stage. Their number is 631-506-6600, 631-506-6600. And we're just having a really great day on this Saturday afternoon. My guest for today is actor, director, and he's got his own business. We'll talk about that as well. That is Yaron Urbas, and he is here. Now, you might remember him from certain shows that you probably watch, and I know I've watched all of them. And by the way, I'm only giving you a small list because there's like 40 or 50 that we could go through. It'll take almost 10 minutes to go through each one. But Orange is the New Black, for example, Bull, Manifest, The Plot Against America, which was, I believe, an HBO thing. And then The Holdovers, Crazy Town, which we'll talk about as well, FBI, Law and Order, Witness, and The Blacklist, and The Men Who Built America, as well as several movies, including, of course, the movie I happen to be on, you can't call it stage, but basically on set for Pickens. So, Yaron, how you doing today?
I'm doing brilliant, as the Brits like to say. I'm doing awesome.
Yeah. So you've dealt with a lot of people, a lot of actors, a lot of different things. And you were talking earlier about you muffed on an audition and you got the part.
Yeah.
And then when you do really well sometimes, because I've done auditions like that too, I'm like, man, I really aced that sucker. Yeah. And they kept me there and they asked me more questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, it's not a 5-second deal. Now they're saying, can you do it this way? Or can you do it this way? Or that was good. And then you don't get the part. And you're like, wow, man, I think I just aced that sucker and it didn't happen. So does that ever happen to you?
Yeah. I mean, there's auditions where I felt like I kicked ass. Like, yeah. Like I was in top form, this, that, the other. So here's what I learned. From the audition on Orange is the New Black that I didn't do my best and I booked, I learned a couple of things. And also just from being in the industry and talking to people. Look, sometimes you're just right for the part.
Yeah.
And that's not to say you can't come in prepared, know your lines, you know, do your thing, prepare. But with that said, if you're right, you're right. Your look, your mannerisms, your energy, mm-hmm. the way you deliver the lines, all these things matter. So, you know, sometimes as soon as you walk, I've heard casting directors say, as soon as someone walks in the room, they kind of already know.
Okay.
If you're at least what you're giving when you walk into the room already, you know, they've seen everything and everyone and they've been doing it a long time. They can almost instantly tell before you open your mouth, okay, this guy will probably fit this character. And then it's up to you to wow them with what you say
Whatever,
and the way
yes.
you say it and the choices you make. But yeah, I've definitely had things where, here's the thing. I just want to, real quick, like, your job isn't really to book the part.
Okay.
That's not your job. Every actor thinks like that.
Okay.
Your job is to win the relationship with the casting director, right? Or whoever you're auditioning in front of, a director, you know, a writer, a producer. Just do your dang best, prepare, give them something they won't forget, And guess what? You'll be welcome again. You will. And eventually they're going to find something for you. I've had casting directors call me in 7, 8, 9, 10 times. I don't book anything, but they keep calling me in. That's not failure. That's okay. Success because they keep calling you back. They're trying to find the right thing for you. That's what's going on. They respect you as an artist. They respect that you can bring what it takes. So yeah, that's the experience right there.
And you're right about that because I remember I was doing a college course at Kane University, or Kane College at the time, and part of the course was acting for television. So you did a cattle call, and I went to New York City, did the cattle call. I believe it was As the World Turns. It was a cattle call, and I had no lines. I was an orderly, or they made me an orderly on one scene where I was carrying something, maybe a dead body. I forget what it was, but in the background. And I got an A in that class, okay?
All right.
And I'm wondering, why did they pick me? Out of all the people that were there, they picked a few people, but why did they pick me? And you're right, it probably was a look that they were looking for because they went across to everybody, no lines. They just looked at you and said, okay, and they asked you a few questions. And then the next thing I know that I get a call, and it was just one time. I was only on the screen for, not very long. But the thing was, it was really, really cool that I did that. And it wasn't because of my audition. It was just the look.
Mm.
They were looking for a look. Mm. And for whatever reason, I would love to say I gave them $100, but, or something along those lines.
Hey, whatever helps.
Yeah,
whatever
but works. And it was good. And like I said, I've done some really great auditions, for shows, HBO shows. I did get Nurse Jackie, which was good, but the others I thought I did so well. I mean, they kept asking me, questions, and I'm thinking, well, maybe this is looking pretty good. And I went back to the, to my manager and to the people that were involved, and I said, I think I got the job. And they're like, no, Pete, they just called me. No, you didn't. they went somewhere. I was like, oh, man, talk about deflation, And then I'm driving into New York City. Could you have waited till I got home before you did that? Okay? I mean, seriously,
Eyes and mind on the road. It's kind of hard to do that when you're not feeling 100%.
Exactly. I'm thinking, yeah, so how's it going? Well, you didn't get the part. Crash. It's like...
You know what I love? I love the analogy. Like, even if for the folks listening out there, even if you're not an actor, like I'm a business person and I've been an athlete. I've been a bunch of, my journey never will end, I hope.
Okay.
And I think, actors, I've been in sales. I'm not afraid of the word no. I'm not afraid to fail. I have failed so many freaking times.
Okay.
That I know success is inevitable if I keep going. And I think if you're an actor, if you're a salesperson, if you're an entrepreneur, whatever you do, if you're a book author like you are, you've written books, you've done a million things yourself, man. You're a massive success. And it's because you don't stop. And I think the success mindset is really the thing that acting, auditioning, it just conditions your mind to keep going. And that's what I would say to anyone, just pursuing anything, man. Just keep going.
Yeah.
The no is just a temporary thing. Eventually you get to a yes. Eventually you'll be the right person for the job, the right person for the part, the right manager for the business, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, acting is kind of like sales. And I've done sales all my life, okay? Mm-hmm. Radio station stuff, television station stuff, airlines, aviation. I'm a pilot, so I get involved with a lot of the major airlines. And my full-time job is, for many, many years was sales. And the thing I learned about that is similar to acting. And that is, you're going to be getting a lot of no's before you get a yes. It's just a matter of who you're seeing and when you're seeing them. But a no is never just a no. It's usually a maybe. Only if they throw you out of the building.
Right.
Then it's a no, okay? If they tell security, if
maybe
you're coming
not.
Back in again, you're done. But the bottom line is it's all percentages. The more time, the more you audition, the more you put yourself out there, you got a very good shot. You're going to get it eventually. So just hang in there and do the best you can. And the thing I noticed about day players, and I know a lot of day players as well, they start off as day players, and whenever they need somebody, they just call them. As long as they go, oh, listen, we're going to upgrade you now. Now we're going to actually give you some lines, okay? And then we're going to maybe use you. And then I know one actor, for example, he started as a day player. He did that for about a year or so. And that same director and producers, they say, well, let's use him. And he goes up and up. And then before you know it, he's doing several roles, seven different times, lines. I mean, he's not to the level of a star, but he's getting there. And I think that's the key.
To talk to that point real quick. So nowadays, I mean, I'm still acting, but I'm also a writer. I'm also producing.
Sure.
I just finished writing a feature film, a romantic comedy. So recently I was a first AD on a project with a producing partner. Her name's Deborah Twist. And she's got a film out there if I can plug.
Deborah's actually been on this show.
Deborah's been on
this. She's amazing.
Isn't she? Now, Deborah Twist is an entrepreneur. She's a producer, a writer. She does it all. She does it all. And she's definitely a powerhouse. And she's got a movie out there right now called Taboo. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. And I was first AD on that. She invited me. That was my first time being a first assistant director on the project.
Okay.
Now, what I've come to realize as a writer, producer, when we cast now I'm realizing if you're fresh in my head and I remember you or I had a great experience with you on set, I have a puzzle. I have a role I need to fill. Now, if I'm able to use a casting director and I have a budget, great. But if I can't, I just have to remember, who do I work with that I really like that can play this character? Oh, I just work with this really cool dude, Pete, on set.
Uh-huh.
And he happened to be a sidekick on a mafia movie we both did together called Pickings, right? With a director who was awesome, Usher.
Yes.
And you would be perfect. As a matter of fact, I am working on something right now, and I think you would be perfect for it. So you heard on radio right now.
There you go, folks.
I think I'm going to be able to ask. Hopefully you'll be kind enough to spare some of your time and be in this Nest project I'm working on.
And on this show, we could do the same thing I did in the last show. Yeah, boss. Yeah, boss. Yeah. Okay.
But just be likable.
I could be like a Joe Pesci type, you know.
I know what you can do, man. You can do it all. You can do it all. But I think what the sort of the general point is: look, be fun to be on set with.
Yeah.
Be memorable, and you know what? You'll probably get invited back because you'll be fresh on their mind.
And that's true. So Philadelphians, if you're acting and you want to get into it, speak to Yaron here because he knows exactly what needs to be done. You got to establish some kind of a bond with these people, with these directors, and they remember you. And like Yaron says, he's going to go back and say, okay, I don't want a person I don't know. I know this person. I know what they can do. They're not going to mess me up on time, and I'm going to be able to get the job done. So that's really something else that's important. Now, we got about maybe a minute or a minute and a half before we go to break. I want you to think about this, okay? Now, you've done so much stuff. In fact, I'll go back down the list, and we'll even add stuff, shows that you have done. My question is, do you ever get starstruck? Ever get starstruck when you're in these rooms with all these established, people?
I can't say I don't.
Uh-huh.
I'm extremely and deeply respectful of the people that have been in the industry so much longer than I have.
Sure.
And I have the honor of working with them. So there's definitely an extreme level of respect. Yes, maybe my eyes get dilated, my heart beats a bit, my chest heaves. Is heaves the right word?
So hives.
Hives. My chest hives.
I got them right now.
You've got. definitely. I wouldn't say I get super nervous, but I get energized. That's what I would say. I get excited.
Well, good for you. We'll be talking more about that.
Yeah.
We'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push, and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Here's an important message for everyone who drives a motor vehicle. Every day, an average of 2 emergency responders are struck by vehicles while working on the road. Some don't survive. Others are critically injured and can no longer perform their life-saving jobs. Do your part to keep everyone safe on the road. When you see flashing lights of any color on the road ahead of you, slow down and move over. Give responders room to work. This message is brought to you by Penntime and Beasley Media Group. Learn more about Pennsylvania traffic incident management at penntime.com.
And welcome back to Live on Tape here. Pete Tribuco with, of course, our special guest. He was actually a co-host last week, Yaron Urbas, and we're just so happy to have him here. You might remember him because he's been in so many different television and movies, including Orange is the New Black, Bull, Manifest, Plot Against America, The Holdovers, Crazy Town, FBI, Law and Order, and of course The Blacklist, and The Men Who Built America. Now, let's harp on The Men Who Built America. I had a guest on here, and he did all those shows on the History Channel?
History Channel.
And they loved him. Well, one time he's playing Abraham Lincoln, next time he's playing somebody else, and they just loved him. What was that experience, you know, being on those type of shows?
So I'm glad you brought that up, man, because that was my first big break.
Uh-huh.
That was the one. And I'll keep it brief, but basically, there's a company called Steven Entertainment, if I'm right, and they're known for making docudramas. And The Men Who Built America was about the industrial era.
Yeah.
Right? The robber barons of the time, you know, or, you know, the oil guys, the train guys, you know, they built America through all this industrialization. Now, Steven David Entertainment, I believe. Anyway, what they did was they broke the mold. Docudramas were shot very cheaply, quickly, and not high production value. But they shot these almost in a cinematic, big picture style. And it was amazing. It was brilliant. So anyway, I get a call around, it's in December, it's during the holidays. I had auditioned maybe months ago, and out of the blue, they're like, hey, hi, is this your own? I'm like, yes, hi. They're like, listen, we want you for a character, Hugh O'Donnell, you auditioned for. And I'm thinking, like, what? I don't even remember this.
Okay.
And he's like, yes, I'm actually the producer on the show. And we'd like to fly you out to West Virginia.
Okay.
What? So this was my first time.
Oh my goodness.
You're going to pay? Wait, so how much will it cost me to fly there? They're like, no, we're going to fly you there. Wait, I don't have to pay for my own hotel? No. You got to remember, I was non-union. I had been auditioning left and right, not booking anything significant, small roles, building my reel, doing student films, community theater. None of that pays, and you're not used to being, it's not that people were mean, but you're special even when you're successful, but you're not used to the special treatment and people paying for you to do things. And this was the first time, so I was like, holy cow. And I remember actually saying to him, do you mind if I call you back? And he's like, what? I'm like, I'm just driving. I have to park my car for a moment because I gotta take this in for a moment. You asked me before if I get starstruck. I was starstruck by this phone call.
Oh, wow.
Because it was like, wow. So, okay, I call him back, and long story short, they set everything up. I go out on set. So here's a story I want to share. My journey in life, I'm very spiritual. I believe in God. And I think God has given me messages throughout my life and helped me, and in some ways done the opposite, put obstacles in front of me when he doesn't, or when he feels like, you know what, this is too easy. I think you need to be challenged to make sure you really deserve this. So what I think happened on this set, someone forgot to give me my lines for a speech that I was supposed to deliver.
Yes, I've heard about this. Yes.
I told you this. Okay.
It's a great story.
I had all my other lines, but the director kept saying in this awesome British accent, you know, your own, you know, I hope you have your lines ready for your speech. And I apologize to all my Brit friends. My accent's terrible, but I like to pretend. So I just nodded my head. I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. Anyway, eventually it's my turn. I have to stand on a podium, on a stage with like 50, 60, 70 extras in front of me. And it turns out I have a speech to deliver. And I'm like, I don't have a speech. So long story short, they figure out that they didn't give it to me accidentally. It's okay. Things happen. It's real life. My big moment. This is a pretty big moment for me. Hugh O'Donnell was a real dude. He was a union leader.
Sure.
And the Pinkertons were these detectives back then. They weren't the nice guys. They were the heavy for the industrial guys. So basically, long story short, I'm on stage and I'm flubbing my lines a bit. I had literally 5 minutes with this speech. It was a one-page thing.
Sure.
Luckily, the director was such a good writer. He actually wrote this speech that actually flowed well. It almost felt like a rap. And by the way, I used to be a rapper when I was a kid. I was on a label.
I could see that.
So long story short, I got through it and the extras weren't, and they didn't know. God bless them. You know, they didn't know this dude didn't get these, you know, I look like I'm not prepared, this, that, and the other. Anyway, long story short, we got through it. The scene came out awesome. And the person who forgot to give me my lines actually texted me while he was airing. And it was a massively successful project. Certainly not because of me, but because of all, you know, just everything put behind it.
Yeah.
And I actually made the reel in like the European version or something. I made the trailer. So I don't know. I must have the right look for the European crowd or something. But I remember the person who forgot to send me my lines texted me and said, Jerome, you did a great job.
That is fantastic. So and that started it. That started
trial by fire, man. Trial by fire. Be ready.
Like I said, we talked obviously to Richard Klein last week, and we talked about how the scripts change. that quickly, and then you have to memorize that. True actors can actually go ahead and do that. Me, on the other hand, if you want me to do a show, you got to give me 6 weeks.
Okay.
I need six weeks to know the script.
Done.
Okay?
Done.
I mean, seriously. Although, if it's easy stuff, it's easy. But the bottom line is, it's tough to be an actor. Not just because you don't get picked, but because you've got to learn these lines, you've got to do them quickly, and you did. And I'm assuming when you tell the story the last time, you were talking about you're flubbing your lines a little bit, and now you got all these other day players that are looking at you, and they're saying, man, this guy is supposed to, he's got lines, you know? And I'm sitting here, you know, basically holding up a tree stump or something or whatever, doing something, you know? And I'm like, and that must have been hard for you looking at all of them, and they're saying, well, I could do better.
Guys were giving me advice on the way when the scene was done. They're, they're like, hey, man, hey, I got, you know, and it's fine. Background's important too. I did background for years, okay? So I respect my background people. But I remember guys giving me advice, you know, if you want to memorize lines, and they don't know, and I'm not going to tell them that they didn't give me my lines, blah, blah, blah. But sure, it was hilarious. It was actually pretty funny. You know, people are like, actually, I remember the director was so kind because at first it started with a big crowd. Again, 70 to 80 background guys. And what the director actually did, because he noticed some guys were a little irritable, so he actually started thinning it out a bit.
Okay.
So he took the guys at the edges and he reduced it. Now, honestly, I've been in front of a stage to hundreds, at some point maybe even close to 1,000 people. I used to sing.
So okay.
I used to be a rapper. So I'm used to being in front of an intense, passionate, let's say rowdy audience. I don't have no problem with that.
Okay.
But I appreciate the director sort of peeling some of the background guys out of the crowd. And then there's this one dude, I won't forget, nicest dude. And you got to remember, we all look grungy because we're just from that era. We're workers. We're men. We work. We had grime on our faces. This one dude just smiled at me throughout the entire thing. You don't see. You only see the back of his head. And I just kept looking at him. And that's what they say you do in an audience. Look for the person smiling.
Look,
that emboldens you. And we actually bonded a bit, you know, and it was cool. I took a bus ride with him. That was a nice moment. Yeah.
Well, it's good if they're smiling. It's a lot worse if they look at you and basically you're like giving you that frown. Like, man, you stink.
Yeah,
you're awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But of course, on stage, you don't see anything. You know, if you're on stage and I've done, theaters that are 700, 800,000 people. And I would love to have one person. I love doing the small ones, the small theaters where you could see the first row.
Sure. Yeah.
And you could actually look at them and see what their response is going to be. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking into nothing, and again, auditions, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at nothing, just a voice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that is like so threatening to me. I don't know. I don't like that. I want to see the person, or at least harp on a person, like you said, this person was smiling at you. Who's making it easy for you? He was like, you're doing great. Keep going.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So now let's get into a manifest. We want to talk about Crazy Town too as well.
Sure.
That's one that you did 4 or 5 episodes for. So go ahead.
Yeah, Crazy Town is actually another, we talked about a woman named Deborah Twiss, who's been on this show before.
Uh-huh.
She's a consummate actress, producer, writer, just a powerhouse in the industry. Talk about a strong, independent woman who's succeeding in the industry. She's been doing this for a very long time. She actually had a background in the striptease entertainment industry.
We talked about that. Yes.
Yeah. And she was, she was in the industry. She was a dancer.
Uh-huh.
Awesome person. Clearly very attractive, but super smart as well. And, and just a really sweet, kind-hearted person. I remember when I didn't know her, I had seen her in things. And I was like, you look at her and you can be a little intimidated.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of the beautiful people. Let's just say that.
She
is. And when I met her, she was so cool, so chill, so down to earth, and we've bonded ever since. We've been good friends ever since. She invited me to be in Crazy Town, which is basically almost the telling of her experience in the industry.
Yeah.
Working as a dancer at different venues and all that. And I played one of the managers at the place. And I think that my character was based on a manager she worked with that was kind of cool and looked out for the girls. He wasn't the sleazy type, And I had a lot of fun. Crazy Town is definitely crazy. There's a lot of characters in it and a lot of it's interesting. It's funny. Definitely check it out. It's out there. You can go and watch it.
I'm sure Amazon Prime or one of them is actually running that
just
as well.
Google Crazy Town. You'll trust me. You'll enjoy it.
So I'm looking, the Blacklist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you do there?
So on the Blacklist, so man, you just keep hitting on the ones that are like my firsts, which is awesome. So the Blacklist was my first project that got me into SAG-AFTRA.
Really?
The union. For those who don't know, that's the Actors Union.
Sure.
That was my debut. That's like, think of it, imagine you've been playing in the minor leagues all your life, and all of a sudden they invite you to the show.
To the show.
To the show. To the major leagues. That was my moment. I made it to the show. I had originally auditioned for something. I went to the casting director, and they needed a last minute. They said, can you do a French accent? And I got all stressed. I was like, I didn't know I had to prepare a French accent.
Sure.
He said, no, it's okay. Just, do you have any accents? I said, I can do an Israeli accent. And I said, oh, so she said, okay, go ahead, do it. Long story short, that led to me being called back to play a Mossad agent on the Blacklist.
Wow.
And it was awesome. I actually got to play opposite Sami Sheikh, who's a very, very well-known respect. I love this guy. He's a Middle Eastern actor, a really good human being. And he has to, you know, we're arch enemies in this episode, unfortunately, and he has to shoot me in the back of the head.
Oh, no.
But throughout the whole thing, where he's like being super careful, we're checking the clip, making sure, especially with what's happened, you know, as we all know the story in recent, I won't get into all the details, but the incident with Rusted, the film Rust.
That's right,
Rust,
yeah, yes.
You know, the accidental shooting of and may she rest in peace, the DP. But long story short, I've been on sets with guns. And checking the chamber all the time and all these things. And I could even share a story where there was a live round in a gun on a set that I was in. It was a World War II film.
Are you serious?
Yes, I was in a World War II film called Our Dance Fury. Thank God that the armory guy?
Yeah.
That it's their job to check for live ammunition and guns. And there were a bunch of background guys, but what they do is they recreate war things. That's what they do. We were out in it was like west of Clearwater, Florida.
Okay.
Alabama? Why am I thinking Alabama? Okay, anyway. They're reenactors, and so they're used to creating these fake war scenarios between one another.
Sure.
And one of them, they all had caps, fake bullets, I guess, right? But one of them had a live round in his gun. And thank God the armory guy was on he was on it. I mean, he was like, this guy was a World War II vet. He knew his stuff. I mean, I felt bad for the kid. The kid was crying. Because these are kids. Anyway, so you got to be careful on set. You know, and this happened way before Rust, when I was on the Blacklist, but I made them show me the gun. It was a Glock, made them empty the clip. Let me see, there's nothing in there. But it was great. It was great. I got to be there for a week because even though I was a co-star, which is usually you just get one day.
Sure.
They actually kept me for a week because my partner was the guest star, which is a bigger role on a TV show.
Sure.
And so since he was a guest star, I was his partner. So I got to be there the whole week because I was constantly next to him in most of the scenes.
In all the scenes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome.
But you bring up another point, which basically, Alec Baldwin, obviously, in the movie and everything. And then now you're telling me about that as well. You know, how could that have happened? How could they have missed that to the point where, I just find that unbelievable that people would not check the weapon beforehand. And why was Alec Baldwin actually pointing it at somebody?
You know, before we get into the territory point of things, I've read up on a lot of this, bits and pieces. I'm sure lots of people have. I don't want to go in any direction because I think the only people that can truly understand and know everything about this is all the people directly involved with the investigations. But as I understand, what happened was, look, the armory person on that set was very young. I understand there were some issues on set. I don't know all the details, only the details I read. But there was a live round in that gun.
Yeah.
And without getting into all the nuances, that shouldn't have happened. And how a live round got into a gun is probably the issue. And yes, there were both indictments and verdicts delivered at this point.
I know.
And it's just sad because overall it's just sad. So many lives ruined. That's all I can say on that. Just really sad. Look, there's a lot of people in the industry, you know, to pull something positive from this. There's a lot of people who say we don't need to use. I've been in a lot of films with guns.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of people that say we don't need live guns anymore. We've got all these special effects, digital effects, all these things you can do now. You don't need real guns. You don't need real live rounds. And then there's some schools that think, hey, the sound of I'm not a gun guy, but basically the caps that don't, you know, not real bullets.
Yeah, the blanks, basically.
Thank you, blanks. You know, blanks give that certain kick to the gun and make a certain sound. that supposedly just makes it feel like it's real. But a part of it is acting. And a part of it is, you know, like the sound. We've got sound guys. We've got, I'm sure there's other ways in the year 2024 to do this. And a lot of people are seriously considering this. You know, do we really need do we need guns on set, you know, that can handle real bullets? Do we need that?
That's a very interesting
concept. That's the debate.
That's the debate that we'll continue talking about. Yeah. We're going to be going to break, so we'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages.
Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Teachers shape the future. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who'll make preventing pandemics their life's work. Sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who'll help combat climate change. And generating possibilities for a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
And hello, everybody. Live on Tape with Peach Buco here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio Philadelphia with, of course, my producer, Tyler Conklin. Couldn't do the show without him. He's just an incredible guy who's got all these different badges to get in all these different rooms that I can't get into, you know, so it's really sad. But he's great doing that. We have a fantastic guest, and it's Yaron Orbas. We talked to him about this before, but I got to bring it up again. Some of the favorite shows that I have watched, he is in. Orange is the New Black, Bull, Manifest, Plot Against America, The Holdovers, Crazy Town, which was an amazing show that was done by one of the up-and-coming producers and directors. We also had The Men who... Built America, The Blacklist, FBI, Law and Order. But in addition to being an actor, and he's good, he's so good, and he's got some stuff coming up as well, he also has his own company, which he started. And by the way, I've actually used it. My website, if you go to www.petetrabuco.com, that's the website that this individual actually created. He also did it for, you know, big-time people like Richard Klein, you know, who obviously was on Three's Company, incredible actor, still working, and he's got a really good business. So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, before I got into the entertainment business, I was a software engineer. Uh-huh. I was in finance, I was in sales, eventually settled into software engineering, and then I started moving away from the tech stuff and more into the sales and marketing stuff for a couple of publicly held companies. You know, companies like Linkshare and Rakuten, these are brands that still exist. They're still out there, LivePerson. And I left doing that as an executive VP to pursue acting at some point. But in the meantime, what I did was I built a marketing agency because I had so much sales and marketing knowledge.
Sure.
And more recently, in the past few years, I started moving into public relations as well. So what I do is I do marketing and PR for businesses typically from small to mid-sized companies. As well as startups. I'm a startup guy. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've built easily about 6 or 7 businesses myself.
Wow.
Since the age of 18. I've always had a small business on the side, even when I was in corporate. So with that said, I built a marketing PR agency, and I help businesses and brands grow. I help them succeed. I help them sell online. And I've also been working with talent because I'm talent. I work with talent. I know what talent needs. Uh-huh. And all sorts of talent. Acting talent, sports talent, modeling talent. And I help them do PR. I help them grow their brands on social. Yes, I help them like yourself. I help you develop your site. I'm always pushing you a little bit to try and get out there on social. I got you on Facebook. We got to get you on Instagram and TikTok, but we'll get there. You know, we're recording some of this talk show stuff that we're doing right now, right? The video stuff. But yeah, the name of the company is YummyMediaAgency.com. Again, that's YummyMediaAgency.com. And I love doing it. I love helping people grow and just do better. I love doing that.
And your background, I will tell you, folks, I've had websites before, okay? And they're pretty easy, you know, GoDaddy, all that type of stuff. It, you know, it's pretty easy, but it's not really flashy or good. Now, when you're dealing with Yaron here, he thinks outside the box when it comes to how it should look. And like I said, if you go to my website, it's actually amazing. I had nothing to do with it, okay? But it's an amazing way to do this. And Yaron goes out of his way to make sure
Thank you, Pete. Everyone is happy with that.
So, again, give me the website one more time.
Yep, that's yummymediaagency.com.
Okay. Now that we've done that, I want to go back to your acting career.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about a whole bunch of different things. But one of the things that really intrigues me is the fact that people get depressed all the time when they're doing this. Oh, I'm going to give up. I'm going to give up. I'm going to do this. You know, I just can't make it. What do you give advice? Now, give advice to some people out there. Now, they're struggling. You know, we had COVID, which changed the whole industry. Now everything's video as opposed to actually going in to an audition, which it loses something when you don't go into the audition.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that real quick.
I think what you just said about the energy of being in the same room with another person is completely different, right?
Yeah.
Like, Pete, you and I right now are in the same room. For our listeners, they may not know that. We're in the same place.
Yeah.
You and I have spoken before over the phone or over the Zoom while we do the show, and it's different.
Yeah.
The energy of being able to look each other in the eye and feel each other's energy is amazing. So with that said, the industry's changing that. We used to go into an office to meet with a casting director and audition right in front of them where they could feel our energy. They could have a brief conversation with us before we start the audition. Well, now we're all self-taping. So basically, there's a camera at home. We're on our own. We're responsible for our own setup, our own lights, our own, you know, and we're recording. And look, there's some advantages to that. For example, you may not have to memorize lines if you have a piece of paper in front of you.
And you can practice. And you can do it over and over and over and get until you like it.
That's correct. You got it. Those are definitely advantages. But the disadvantage is you don't get any feedback. You don't get any notes. When you're in the room with the casting director, they may go, you know what? I like that, but try it this way.
Exactly.
You know, throw that line away. You know what? Less face. You know what? More energy. You don't get that with a self-tape. And the other problem with the self-tape, a lot of us believe, is probably they... So it used to be when they invited to the room, it might be 20 people you're up against. With self-tapes, you might be up against 100, 200, 300 people, and I doubt they have the time to watch every single one.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, look, they're trying to do their best too. I love my casting directors. I love my directors, my producers, my writers. But it's a huge change, and it's changing how we audition for sure. It's had an impact.
Yeah, I would say so. In fact, I don't like doing self tapes. I just don't. I got crappy equipment. It doesn't come out right. And then sometimes you even have problems because it's too big and you can't send it because it's too big. So I'm old school. You know, send me into a cattle call. I'd rather do that because I could be personable. I could make eye contact, which is something you can't do when you're auditioning.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of times you can have a person, they do real well on video, but they won't make eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't take it. They won't be able to make changes quickly. And you'll see that when they're in an audition. If you say, yeah, that was good, but can you do it this way?
Yeah.
They might say, well, I can't do it that way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know what you want, you know, and they freak out. And you never want that when you're dealing with live theater. And you never want that when you're dealing with people in a film, because it could take forever. And time is money when it comes to that. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you want to do the best you can with what you have so that you can get past that. But now the second question I had was, if they're struggling or if a person's an actor or an actress right now and they love the industry, they love the business, and it's tough.
Yeah.
Now, you've made it. You've basically been on, I don't know, 2 dozen, 3 dozen shows, productions. You have your own business going. What advice do you have for them?
So a lot of people don't talk about their failures in the business. I made a point of talking about it very recently in a post, and there was so much engagement, so many likes, so many people like, wow, you know, that's inspiring. So what I would recommend is, first of all, you keep going. It's a numbers game. That's number one. Number two, you got to create on your own.
Yeah.
You can't wait for someone to find the right words for you.
Uh-huh.
You can't do that. You've got so many platforms now. You don't need to wait for someone else to discover you in their character's mind.
Uh-huh.
So right now I have a story. I have a couple of stories that I've already started writing. One that I finished that's going to get shot, a feature film. And then I have another mini series that I'm building that's a character that's me. I wrote it. So get your stuff, create. Don't sit there, have a moment for the pity party. It's okay. It happens to all of us. All us actors deal with this every day. We get down.
Sure.
Write. Get on social. Make your little videos. Do a TikTok video. Not everything has to be so like amazing production value. It doesn't have to be. There's something inside of you. There's a story. Everyone has a story. Find your story. Okay, find your idea. Find your brand. As a marketer, that's what I do. What you need to do is get it out there somehow. And it ain't going to be perfect. And maybe some of it is going to be silly or you won't connect. Keep doing it. You'll find your path. Just keep going, create content, put it out there.
And that's the most important thing. And also, you mentioned the smile. Find the person in that room that loves you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Good close.
And that about does it. So on behalf of myself and, of course, Yaron and, of course, Tyler, thank you so much. And we will talk to you again next week.